from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Drivers in Oklahoma City may have been rubbing their eyes in disbelief when they went to the pump last week. Gas was $1.99 per gallon, a four-year low. That nationwide trend is being felt in the Bay Area, too, where the average price of gas has dropped to $2.99 a gallon. Now, you may not be seeing that in San Francisco or Marin, where per-gallon prices continue to hover north of $3, but some drivers in the East Bay and South Bay are seeing prices well below that. So are these falling gas prices good for California? Joining me to talk about the pros and cons of low gas prices is Severin Borenstein, professor at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business and a research associate of the Energy Institute at Haas. Welcome, Severin Borenstein.
Thank you.
You know, before we get into the pros and cons, just quickly, why are prices so low?
Well, basically, oil prices have been falling worldwide, that's the major component of the price of gasoline. Oil prices are falling in part because of U.S. production being up, the fracking revolution that has greatly increased production in Texas and North Dakota particularly, but also because other parts of the world, particularly Libya and Iraq, have stabilized and are producing more oil. And then the flip side is demand is down. Demand is down worldwide because of slowing economies in China and other parts of the world. And also, these energy efficiency improvements we've had over the years have started to really kick in, particularly with higher fuel economy cars.
So classic supply and demand economics in some way.
Yep, that's how oil markets do work. They're probably one of the best examples of it.
And so, you know, around Thanksgiving, OPEC announced that it would not cut production. And so I'm curious, what's OPEC's interest in keeping production going?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about this, and you can't really talk about OPEC generally because many of the countries in OPEC do want to cut production or at least want Saudi Arabia to cut production. But Saudi Arabia is the big producer and the one with extra capacity, and they've decided not to cut production this time, in part because I think they feel that if they did, they'd be the only one in OPEC and all the others would take advantage of it. But in part, a lot of people think it's because they feel that if they cut production, there's enough extra production coming online in the United States particularly that it would replace it pretty quickly. So if they cut production, they wouldn't manage to drive up prices enough. Or the flip side of that is by not cutting production, they're hoping to maintain their market share and shrink some of this growth that they're seeing out of the United States.
So getting then into the pros and cons of this, Severin Borenstein, I mean, clearly consumers are benefiting right now.
Yeah, consumers are benefiting tremendously. If you do a quick calculation, California consumes about 1.25 gallons of gasoline and diesel per person per day. That's both what you put into your car and what businesses use serving Californians. And so if you think about a dollar per gallon drop in gasoline, you're saving $1.25 every day. A family of four, that amounts to about $150 a month. That's real money, particularly to lower middle-income people who have to commute a lot. And so this is having a huge impact and will show up in expenditures in other areas, in Christmas gifts, of course, people are talking about, but also in groceries and going out to dinner and so forth.
I want to go now to Greg Laskowski, a senior petroleum analyst for Gas Buddy, which helps consumers find the cheapest gas prices, and he formerly tracked fuel prices for the American Automobile Association. Welcome, Greg Laskowski.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
And I was talking with Severin Borenstein just a moment ago about why prices are so low, and he mentioned, you know, that oil production in the U.S. is booming at the same time that demand is down. We're also in the middle of what's called winter gas season, right?
Well, yes, that's right. You know, every year we see gasoline prices follow a fairly consistent seasonal pattern, and the pattern is dictated by federal regulations from the EPA. They require a summer blend of gasoline that's sold from May through September, and that gas has to burn cleaner during the summer months because the EPA wants to reduce smog and pollution in all of the major metro areas across the country. But once we get into October, refineries can put back into the market what's called winter blend gasoline, which is a cheaper gasoline. It has fewer additives in it, and it's sold at a time of year when consumer demand diminishes significantly once we get that summer driving season behind us. So that's why we always see prices come down in the fourth quarter. But what happened this year has been extraordinary. Certainly nobody could have anticipated that prices could have plummeted as dramatically as they have. We see, for instance, that the national average price of gas today is $2.60 a gallon, and that's down 65 cents a gallon from where we were just a year ago.
You know, when I talk with people about these low gas prices, often the reaction I get is, well, then why am I still paying $3.15 per gallon where I am in Marin or San Francisco? Can you just remind us quickly why the regional differentials?
Well, the reason why is because California and New York pay the highest prices on gasoline, or the highest taxes, I should say, on gasoline from anywhere in the U.S. You're paying 68 cents a gallon just in federal and state gasoline tax in New York and California. You go to Arizona, they're only paying 37 cents a gallon for their gasoline tax. So that's the key reason why California usually has the highest retail prices in the whole country.
And Greg Laskowski, are you tracking auto sales at all? There have been reports nationally that Chrysler, Ford, and GM, and other, you know, makers of pickup trucks and big SUVs are actually doing really well these days.
I have heard anecdotally some of the same things that you're saying, and it's concerning because it suggests that consumers may have amnesia. You know, we sometimes when prices go down, we forget how bad things were when gas prices were higher. I don't think we're going to see an awful lot of people driving Hummers, but you know, there's certainly going to be some interest there, I suppose. But I still think consumers are going to tread carefully when they make, you know, new car purchases.
Severin Borenstein, do you think this could have an effect in a negative way on hybrid and electric car makers?
Oh, I think it definitely will. If prices for gasoline stay this low, I think people who were thinking about buying an alternative fuel vehicle, particularly electric cars and natural gas vehicles, are going to be much less interested in it because the savings are a whole lot smaller. Hybrids are coming into the market in a broad way regardless because they really don't cost that much to add on to a conventional vehicle now. And so we're seeing hybrids in a wide swath of the fleet, and I think that is going to continue regardless because gasoline may only be $2.50 or $3 a gallon, but that's still a significant expenditure, and if you can boost your fuel economy by 10 miles a gallon, that's going to be a big savings. But the alternative fuel vehicles, I think, definitely have to worry if oil prices stay this low.
Right. Wired, I believe, wrote a piece about how Palo Alto-based Tesla could be affected by this. Do you think Tesla has to be very careful right now to make their argument more compelling to folks about their electric cars?
Well, Tesla's current sales are primarily to the wealthy and very wealthy who want it more as a very different experience than just for fuel savings. I think the big risk for Tesla is their next generation car, which they are talking about being much more of a middle class car in the $30,000 to $40,000 range. And that is going to have to sell in great part based on the value of the fuel savings. And if gasoline is only $2.50 or $2 a gallon, the fuel savings are not going to look nearly as good.
And Greg Laskowski, we're talking about how hybrid electric car makers could be hurt. Who else could be hurt with these falling prices?
Well, there's no question that the states that are dependent on energy production are going to see some of the adverse effects. We've already seen some of the major oil companies, some of their contractors. You know, those, if they're publicly traded companies, a lot of them have lost significant valuation.
So states like Texas, for example, Severin Borenstein? Oh, I'm sorry. I believe we may have lost Severin Borenstein. So states like Texas, Greg Laskowski?
Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio. There are a number, and certainly the Dakotas. You know, we can't forget that when you talk about North Dakota and the Bakken region, it's been an extraordinarily successful amount of production. that they've driven. And because they're able to produce lower-cost crude oil, that's been one of the things that's helped bring global prices down. When you have low-cost energy production, whether it's coming in from Canada, from Mexico, from the West Permian Basin in Texas, from the Bakken region, all of that production helps to bring global crude oil prices lower. And this is exactly what has triggered the OPEC decision that was announced on Thanksgiving Day. When OPEC said that they were going to maintain their current production levels, that brought about a reduction in crude oil prices from $74 a barrel on Thanksgiving Day to $58 where we are today.
We're speaking with Greg Laskowski, senior petroleum analyst for GasBuddy.com, and Severin Borenstein, professor at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business and a research associate of the Energy Institute at Haas. How are you affected by low gas prices, and are you ecstatic or worried about the falling price of gas? This is a half-hour segment, so give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Severin Borenstein, are you with us again?
I am. I'm back.
Okay, great. And so one of the questions that I had also, one of the reasons that I've asked our callers about whether they're worried about the falling price of gas is because advocates for, you know, reduced auto pollution and greenhouse gas emissions, I imagine, must be worried right now.
Absolutely. As much as it would be better if these high prices went to government revenues instead of the oil companies, high prices do discourage use of oil and transportation fuels that create greenhouse gases. And as we've seen prices fall, as you mentioned, the interest in driving an SUV has gone back up because it's much more affordable at $2 or $2.50 a gallon, and they get much worse fuel economy and put out a lot more greenhouse gases. So it definitely is a problem for the environment if the prices stay this low, particularly for the need to make progress on reducing greenhouse gases that cause global warming.
And then also upticks in travel, either by car or even by airplane, I imagine, because often this drives cheaper tickets for airlines, and then you end up getting a lot more travel, upticks in travel?
You do, although at this point it's not as clear that the airlines are going to lower their prices. We've seen so many mergers in the airline industry that there's a lot of talk among those in the industry that they might be able to keep their prices up and keep these as profits. That obviously doesn't make travelers very happy, though it would prevent this turning into a big boom in additional travel. But the concentration in the airline industry, it's a very different situation than the much more competitive oil and gasoline market.
Now, you touched on this earlier, Severin Borenstein, but oil-producing countries, I mean, Russia, for example, must not be happy about this.
No, the oil-exporting countries are getting really hit by this, particularly the ones that have been going year to year on these revenues to make their budgets balance. And Russia, Venezuela, Iran have really been needing the revenue on a month-to-month basis in order to keep their governments going. Seeing their revenue suddenly drop by a third or a half is a huge blow to them. And so that is going, from a strategic point of view from the United States, that's actually something of a positive because many of these countries have been pretty antagonistic to the United States. Saudi Arabia, which is more of an ally, is also getting hit, but they have a big reserve. They're one of the countries that has been socking money away from their past sales. An interesting additional effect is in Africa, where there are a number of countries that are fairly small producers, but it amounts to a big part of their government budget, and they are taking a big hit as a result, and it really could set back economic development in Africa.
Even though some of these countries, not Africa, but the ones that you mentioned earlier, may be somewhat maybe antagonistic to the United States, I imagine it's not in the U.S.'s interest if there is too much destabilization of these nations.
Well, it's really hard to predict how much is too much destabilization. You know, if you look at Venezuela, if this caused a real change in the leadership in Venezuela, that would probably be in the U.S. interest, given how antagonistic the current government is. And there is a opposition that barely lost the last election that I think would likely be much more pro-U.S. In other countries like the like Russia, there's a lot more concern that as their budgets tighten, it's really unpredictable and hard to know what Putin's response would be and whether it would be to try to fire up people even more against the West.
And let's hear what our callers have to say. Let's go to Karen in Oakland. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just want to say that I am one of many of Americans, and especially Bay Area people, who would still be buying the Teslas if I had the money, but the Priuses and other hybrids and electric cars, because we think that and know that the oil economy is one of the biggest contributors to global warming. So even if it's cheaper, that doesn't concern us, although it does concern our pocketbooks, because there's a moral issue as well.
Karen, thanks. Let's go to Steve in Sacramento. Hi, Steve.
Hi. A few minutes ago, you had a question about the high prices in Marin in San Francisco, and it was attributed to California gasoline tax. I live in Sacramento, and I pay $2.65 a gallon for regular, which is almost the national average. I pay the same gasoline taxes everywhere else in Sacramento. So how come San Francisco and Marin are so much more expensive?
Steve, thanks. Anything else you want to add to your point, Greg Laskoski, that it's gas taxes and the regulations in California?
Oh, sure. Well, it certainly isn't exclusively gas taxes, but when you're looking at California gas prices in general, that's the key reason why you're always looking at higher retail prices. Within the state, however, your caller is certainly making a valid point, and there are always going to be differences, especially in a state as large as California, because you have any number of different prices that retailers will have to pay, depending on what distributor they're purchasing from, what refinery that fuel is coming from. Let's not forget that California can basically only use fuel produced in its own state, because fuel produced in other states doesn't meet the state, your own state's criteria. So when we've had instances in recent years where three or four refineries go down or are temporarily handling repair issues, it creates significant spikes in California that aren't experienced in other parts of the country. So all of, there are any number of factors. Another thing to recognize is that when you have a major tourist destination, you know, there are many attractive areas in California, and these areas you're going to find retailers that will charge whatever the price will bear, and that holds true whether you're talking about a gas station or whether you're talking about Starbucks coffee.
Right. Steve, thanks for the call. Let's take one more. Dave and John in Alameda. Hi, John.
Hi. 2 points. First of all, is the falling stock price issue of the fossil fuel industry as a result of these things perhaps a good sign of the end of the fossil fuel industry and another wedge for alternative fuels? And second, Professor, you were on earlier, I believe about a week ago, talking about cap and trade and the fact that our goals for carbon emissions reductions in California are too low, and you'd like to see them higher, and I assume that the cap and trade price per ton of carbon is also too low. I'd like to hear you address where that ought to go and how much more we ought to be working on that.
John, thanks. Severin Borenstein, first the question on whether destabilization of the fossil fuel industry is a good thing. I imagine that depends on how you feel about it, but do you want to comment on that?
Well, yeah, and I think it's pretty clearly not the end of fossil fuels, because the reason we're having this is primarily because we found a lot more fossil fuels. So it's actually the supply of fossil fuels has gone up. Oil companies are not making as much money, but they're still making plenty of money to continue to produce oil. And sadly, in terms of global warming, I think there's a lot of cheap oil in the world, and technology is getting better and better to get that oil out of the ground. On cap and trade, we're on January 1st, fuels are going to become part of the cap and trade program, and that's going to raise the price of gasoline in California by about 10 cents a gallon relative to the rest of the country, very modest increase. And that's because the cap and trade market in California is flush with these allowances, and so the price of them is very low. It's possible that the low price of oil will drive up the demand for gasoline and eventually push us more up against the constraints of the cap and trade law, But I think that we're still a long ways from that. I think that it's likely that's still going to have a very modest effect on the price of gasoline.
Severin Borenstein, still petroleum companies are calling this a new hidden gasoline tax, even though it's been out there that come January 1, diesel, gasoline, and other transportation fuels will fall under the cap and trade program. But with such low prices, are their arguments losing steam? I mean, I read an article recently that some GOP lawmakers in other states are actually talking about this being a good time to raise gas taxes because they're trying to repair their bridges and highways.
Yeah, I think that this has really taken the steam out of the anti-gas tax movement because we've just seen such a huge decline in oil prices and the resulting decline in gas prices that a 10-cent increase is just not going to make much difference to most people. I think they're still going to see this as a big drop and a Christmas bonus. So I think it really has taken the steam out of the anti-tax movement. I would be surprised still, though, if we see a big move towards increasing gas taxes. Just nationwide, on the federal level and state level, there's been so little movement in that direction that gas taxes adjusted for inflation have declined drastically since the early 1990s. And yet we are suffering real shortages in funding for roads and bridges, and yet there is still no political will to raise gas taxes.
Let me thank John for the call and go to Peter in Sonoma. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I drive a Chevy Volt, and I do so for personal reasons. I actually, you know, I want to support the clean, green economy in California and the world. But it does have a 9-gallon gas tank, and the proposition of $3 a gallon gas or lower, you know, being a working-class American, it does kind of pique my interest. I wish gas were $10 a gallon or more, personally, but do you see... I'm wondering if your callers see in the future gas prices rising again, pushing beyond the 10 cents a gallon per cap trade.
Peter, thanks. Greg Lukoski or Severin Borenstein, would you like to take that?
Well, I think that the Severin oil Borenstein. Markets are signaling that we're not likely to see prices stay this low, although they're not likely to go all the way back up to 100. If you look at the futures market where they trade oil for delivery a year or two in advance, the prices are $10 or $20 a barrel higher than right now. And that indicates that the market thinks that the prices won't go all the way back to 100, but that they will start to drift back up again. And I think that's probably the best guess. That said, it's a guess. It depends very much on the world economy and how much demand there is for oil and on how much supply continues to increase. If you go back a few years when fracking started, many of the skeptics said, oh, this will never last. We won't see a big increase. And yet, U.S. production is up from 6 million to 9 million barrels a day because of the fracking revolution. And it's continuing to grow. So it's very hard to predict.
Greg Lukoski, do you want to take a stab at trying to predict how long these prices will stick around?
I'd have to have a crystal ball. But, the professor, I think, is accurate with that assessment. There's no telling how long it's going to take for crude oil prices to go up. I don't think we've seen the floor yet, even though we're at $57 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate. There's a number of analysts that expect that we could see $40 a barrel, and some have even said $30.
Wow.
I don't think we're going to see oil go that low, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a long time before we see oil back up over $80 a barrel, and it appears that the Department of Energy probably has the same perspective because they announced last week that they expect the national average price of gas for 2015, for the entire year, to be $2.60 a gallon, and that's basically what it is today. So an awful lot of things would have to fall just perfectly, I think, in order for us to see a national average next year at 260, given that the national average for 2014 is going to come in at about 335 or 330 a gallon.
Bob writes, I heard on NPR that a drop in oil speculation has influenced the price decrease for gasoline. What's the role of oil speculation in the price of oil? Severin Borenstein, do you want to?
This comes up every time prices go up or down. It gets blamed on speculators, and there have been just countless studies of this. And with the exception of one person in the, who sort of makes a living arguing that it's speculators, there's not evidence that speculators play a role. They certainly can play a role in the very short term over the course of a few days. But the idea that oil prices were up over 100 because of speculators or now have dropped really just doesn't comport with any of the research or the basic supply and demand in the market.
And Holly,
can I make a comment?
Sorry,
on
go
that?
Ahead, Greg Laskowski.
I would disagree because in 2008 we saw crude oil prices hit $147 a barrel, and we also saw the national average price hit its all-time record high in July of that year at $4.12 a gallon. Now that wasn't because we were driving more.
It was
driven very much by speculation, so much so, in fact, it was one of the few things that both President Obama and Senator McCain actually agreed on. They knew that there were some significant problems that allowed speculation at the time, because when the dollar is weak, you see a tremendous incentive for investment in the commodities markets, and the biggest commodity market we've got is crude oil. It's a safe haven against the weakness of the dollar. So I'm not saying that there's anything untoward about it, but you can't say that speculation doesn't, on occasion, drive crude oil and gasoline prices higher.
Well, there's been a lot of research on this since 2008, and the vast majority of that research does not support the idea that speculation played a major role in 2008. So, you know, there's some disagreement, but people are doing serious research on this, looking closely at those correlations and what might actually be going on, and it just doesn't support the speculation theory.
Well, Holly writes, sorry, framing this topic as helping or hurting the consumer. What about the entire world? We did touch on those world impacts and environmental impacts. A listener writes, good side, it's great for the common person who benefits more than the rich since gas costs are a much bigger percentage of the budget. Bad side, more consumption, more driving, more CO2, more global warming. Thank you, Severin Borenstein, for joining us today. Severin Borenstein is professor at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business and a research associate at the Energy Institute at Haas. And Greg Laskowski, a senior petroleum analyst for GasBuddy.com. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer and Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Again, thank you, Severin Borenstein and Greg Laskowski. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.